Oh, to breathe again. Large sheets of salt water crashed over the bow of the Blue Surveyor as we charged headlong into the tumultuous sea. 12 novice and anxious divers, which included Ramona and me, shielded our faces from the stinging water while clinging to the side railing. Occasionally, we tentatively waved to the similarly drenched occupants of our companion boat, the Firewalker. The dark and swirling skies bore witness that a typhoon had touched the tip of the island the night before, the remnants still threatening. This portentous scene was nothing like the four-color brochure that lured us to this tropical paradise. After what seemed an eternity, we slowed down and then circled. The captains of the two boats miraculously located these small white buoys bobbing in the giant swells. A crew member leaned over the side and snagged our line with a long pole and attached the cable to the boat. We had arrived at the site, the outer edge of Bega Reef on the southern tip of Fiji. Our dive masters gave us last-minute instructions while we quickly donned our gear. More than ready to get below this storm, we carefully timed the swells and jumped in two by two. Well, this was Ramona's and my 8th open water dive. The waves tossed us like beach toys, rendering our snorkels useless. Using our regulators to draw brief gasps of air, we slowly worked our way along the connecting rope to our companion boat. Here we found the mooring line that would lead us down to the coral head, 75 feet below. After a brief equipment check, I gave the okay sign to Ramona and we began our descent. We pulled ourselves hand over hand down the cable into the depths while fighting the strong surge. As we reached 25 feet and then 30, the surge seemed to subside. At 50 feet, we encountered a traffic jam, a panicked diver already heading back up the line. Contrary to the stern warnings from the dive masters, I decided to let go of the line and swim the last 15 feet to the coral head. The moment I released my grip, the current swept me away. Kicking frantically, I desperately grabbed for the line, but with my distorted depth perception, the cable was much farther away than it looked. Just as I felt myself slipping over the edge of exhaustion and panic, I was finally able to grab Ramona's outstretched hand. Heart pounding and barely able to catch my breath, we resumed our descent. When we reached the coral head, I was reluctant to let go of the line, but did. I was delighted to discover that in such a short distance, the current had almost completely subsided. We then traveled almost due west along the coral reef for 100 or so yards, descending another 20 or 25 feet to a sandy ocean floor. And as promised, we found the horizontal rope that marked our destination. About 25 feet beyond the rope, two large perforated aluminum trash cans hovered in the water, anchored to the ocean floor by ropes. Placed there the night before in anticipation of our dive, they had been leaching fish blood into the surrounding water. We anxiously watched as four dive masters took up positions as sentinels behind us, long pointed spears in hand. We turned to watch a fifth diver, who was approaching the barrels, when suddenly our field of vision was completely filled by a 5-foot grouper. Well, gaining composure, Ramona looked at me, held her hand to her heart, and patted her chest. It's hard to smile with a regulator in your mouth, but if she could, she would have. Well, we checked our air gauges. We had each started with 3,000 pounds of compressed air. Now, surprisingly, my gauge now read, you want to guess? 1,100 pounds. 2/3 gone. I quickly signaled one of the dive masters. He instructed me to be calm and stay where I was. Well, I turned back just in time to watch the fifth dive master empty the contents of the trash cans, those bloody fish parts. I attempted to breathe shallow in an effort to conserve air, but the anticipation of what was about to happen sabotaged the attempt. You know, just a few months earlier, I had purchased dive certification as a unique Mother's Day gift for Ramona. Now we stood side by side, holding on to a thin rope, my air dissipating quickly, thousands of miles from home, 90 feet below the water's surface, a storm raging above us. Intentionally diving with sharks. Are we crazy? Well, sensing the promise of good prey, these torpedo-shaped predators had been patiently waiting some 75 feet off, just outside the range of visibility. Now they began slipping silently into view. The first one was a huge bull shark. It confidently and effortlessly glided through the water, heading directly for the alluring meal. Unexpectedly, it wasn't scary. But of course there wasn't any sound effects or ominous music. Well, hardly able to take my eyes off this graceful creature, I quickly glanced again at my air gauge. 900 pounds and dropping fast. I felt this familiar surge of adrenaline. At this depth, even shallow breaths consumed a lot of compressed air, and I wasn't breathing shallow. I touched Ramona's arm, and she turned to see the gauge. Not good. I again signaled one of the dive masters, more urgently this time, and he quickly motioned for me to come with him. I motioned for Ramona to stay with the group, turned my back to the sharks, and followed the dive master. Now, within moments, I felt something nip at my fin, and I instinctively jerked around to face my fate. There were sharks in the area, but no imminent threats, other than a very vivid and active imagination. At least not yet. So we resumed our journey. The dive master took us on a rather circuitous route around the coral reef while doing his best to avoid incoming sharks. As we crested the coral head, the mooring line was finally in sight. I stopped kicking and paused for a moment, looked behind me, and then exhaled a deep sigh of relief. Ramona was in the hands of experts and safe, and there was only 70 feet between me and the mooring line that would take me to safety. Well, I attempted to inhale. Instantly, a tsunami of terrifying emotions crashed over me, ripping apart every remaining fragile fiber of sanity. My tank was empty. I was out of air. Now, I'd been trained for this moment a few weeks earlier in a community swimming pool, but I was nearly 70 feet underwater, surrounded by feeding sharks with a violent storm raging above us. I want you to inhale deeply through your mouth. Go ahead. Pull in as much air as you possibly can until your lungs are at their full capacity. Now hold your breath just for a moment as you present yourself in your current life circumstances, relationships, career, state of your finances. Are you present? Can you see it? Can you feel it? Now slowly exhale through your mouth. When all of the air has been exhaled, push with your diaphragm to force out any last vestiges of oxygen. Now hold your breath as long as you can while I share this next thought. Do you feel as if you're drowning in debt, self-doubt, fear, confusion, or overwhelm? Are you single, aching for a deep, meaningful, and committed relationship? Are you a young mother buried in laundry and dishes and poopy diapers and the constant demands of little children? Are you stuck in a boring, mundane, and repetitious dead-end job? Have you poured your life and life savings into a business that is struggling and nearly out of air? Are you paralyzed by an abusive relationship, lingering addiction, or shame from a past mistake? Go ahead and breathe. Are you gasping for air, out of oxygen, out of energy, out of money, out of faith, out of hope? Does it ever look like it's never ending? Does it ever seem unsolvable? Do you ever feel like all is lost? Is it like you're 75 feet underwater, tank empty, surrounded by flesh-eating sharks, and slipping over the edge of exhaustion and panic, and there is no one to rescue you? Do you hunger and thirst for success and happiness and peace of mind? Are you willing to do whatever it takes to breathe again? Then breathe. As you probably guessed, I wasn't eaten by sharks that day, nor did I drown. But I did come away from that ocean experience with a new appreciation for air and the power and poetry of breathing. The moment I realized my oxygen tank was empty, I lunged forward, kicking as hard as possible until I touched the dive master's fin. As he turned, I signaled my crisis by slashing my open fingers quickly across my neck. In one instantaneous motion, he swept his arm back, located his spare regulator, and positioned it in my mouth. With a grateful heart nearly leaping out of my chest, I welcomed a long drink of fresh oxygen mix. Oh, to breathe again. We soon reached the mooring line and made our ascent, stopping just once along the way for a critical few minutes of decompression. Soon, I was sitting safely on the deck of the Blue Surveyor, inhaling great gulps of delicious salt-tinged air while being warmed by a sun finally peeking through those thick clouds. I was grateful for my modest training. I was deeply grateful for an expert dive master. I was grateful to see Ramona when she surfaced safe and sound. Now, I've reflected on this defining moment many times since. We had received basic training and passed a simple test. Certified to dive, we courageously jumped in. Early in the journey, we encountered dangerous seas and used precious air just getting to the mooring line, just getting started. On the way down, I had violated a basic rule by letting go of the line prematurely, believing I knew more than the dive masters. This mistake cost critical volumes of compressed air and could have caused serious, if not fatal, injury. As a result of this misguided decision, I had to abandon Ramona at the bottom of the ocean to focus on my needs and a rapidly developing crisis. When I ran out of air, I was in real need. This was not a situation that could be resolved with sheer determination, you know, raw willpower, visualization, a clever aphorism, an affirmation, or a motivational speech. I could not just gut this one out. I was out of air and could not breathe. This was not the time to resent my circumstances. This was not a time to wallow in self-pity. This was not a time to draw a line in the sand at the bottom of the ocean and cling to my independent and resistant and often rebellious nature. This moment required immediate and decisive action. There was not a second to waste. It also required assistance from my experienced dive master, who had been in this situation before, and who had air to spare. It required that I ask for assistance. It required that I do my best to stay level-headed and strictly adhere to the directions given. It was my thinking that got me into this mess. It was time to surrender. Let's go a little deeper. This experience was a vivid reminder of another defining moment. We had lost millions of dollars in the real estate collapse in Southern California in the late 1980s. We were facing the prospect of paying back $1 million in personally guaranteed corporate loans and other personal debts accumulated while trying to save our business and our fortune and our lifestyle. We barely sold our dream home before the mortgage became delinquent, but had to drop the price significantly to do so. The net proceeds were immediately consumed by our creditors. The Mercedes, Ferrari, and Corvettes were gone. The 40-foot custom bus was gone. The ATVs were gone. The Brian Head condo was gone. The live-in housekeeper, full-time gardener, and the children's tennis coach were long gone. Years of gut-wrenching work, along with the millions accumulated, had all evaporated in thin air. For the previous 5 years, and only as an avocation, I had been writing and directing and producing educational films on social subjects such as teenage drinking and driving and acquaintance rape and emotional and physical and sexual child abuse. It was time to convert this avocation into a career. 35 years old, and with everything that was left loaded in 2-rider trucks, we packed up our 7 children and relocated to a new city and state. Well, sales from these educational films, mainly to schools, school districts, and the U.S. government, kept us afloat. I worked closely with our creditors while tenaciously studying story structure and tirelessly writing 8 to 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. No exaggeration. And all in an attempt to make my skills commercially viable. For Ramona and our 7 children, it was quite an ordeal maintaining the peace and quiet to facilitate this retooling. Thanks in large part to their willingness to support this endeavor, I was able to complete 4 original feature film-length scripts in less than 2 years. Then one day it happened. With the stroke of a pen, legislative changes dried up funding for purchases of our films. What little income we had ceased. It wasn't very long, and the modest reserve created mostly by selling the last of our personal treasures was gone. We had reached the end of the road. It was a living nightmare that every young father fears most, and one from which we could not awaken. I was a proud man with a proud heart. I was a hard worker. This was not right. This was not fair. Why was this happening to us again? In the darkness of the darkest night, buried in debt, doubt and discouragement, every option I knew thoroughly exhausted, my tank empty, completely out of air, I audibly cried out in excruciating pain. I longed to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must change my God or change my cry. Well, sometimes we need to reach this point in our life, a pivotal moment, where we are ready and willing to do whatever is necessary to create change. We live in a world where we are taught that vivid visualization creates tangible reality. We live in a day when people want to escape and avoid the rigors of life, seeking self-centric ease instead of creating value and making a contribution. We live in a time in history when more is known about human interaction, yet we have never been more disconnected. Having witnessed the failure of mothers and fathers, we live together, often uncommitted, and are far more often very alone. Behind the walls of hate and suspicion, which we built around our hearts and which we present to the world, private storms rage, souls ache, hearts break, self-esteem is undermined, leaving us with little or no energy to willingly focus on the needs of others. Battered by the baseball bat of life, we suffer the bruises of failure and the wounds of mediocrity. We are so ripe for change. If our wall is high, it may take the loss of almost everything before we will introspectively examine our lives and surrender to the truth. I was finally ready. The answers unfolded, and it was not pretty. I had been focusing on me. Well, I'd been telling myself my why was about my family, a noble and altruistic cause. My real why? The secret desire of my heart was to be wealthy enough to get above it all, to live a life of luxury free of stress, pain, and frustration. I was seeking what Ogmandino calls the delivery of gold, love, good health, petty victories, fame, success, and happiness. That night it became readily apparent that my wishes could not be granted and my prayers could not be answered. I discovered that prayer and desired success just don't work that way, no matter how much I wanted it to be different. No matter how many books supported my way, no matter how many speeches and speakers taught it. Then with clarity came a newfound desire to engage in life, embrace time-tested principles, and connect with people, create value, and contribute to the world.